Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in. Thanks for listening to the show each and every week. I do appreciate it. And by the way, KCAA, big station out there in the Inland Empire in Southern California. We've been with them, I was just thinking, what, about 8 years now? Something like that.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So I thought I'd give them a plug, and it's a great station as well as KMET in Southern California. We have a lot of different stations that we do appear on, as well as listen to us on the weekends. And then K Tahoe, we got a great person from up there today going to come down and talk to us about what's happening in the real estate market, what's going on in the mortgage market, and overall in that area, as well as Albuquerque, New Mexico. We next week we'll have a couple of guests on from there, and of course Las Vegas, Nevada, 1400 AM. The Albuquerque station is K-Mine, Ryan.
K-Mine Country.
K-Mine Country. Love K-Mine. Love me some K-Mine Country, and appreciate everybody down there who listens to the show. We get calls almost weekly from the guests we put. I never get a call. Nobody calls me up and says, boy, thank you for the lecture. I really appreciate that, professor. No, I would like that to happen, but it doesn't happen. But they do call for the great guests that come on the show. A lot of them are account executives. A lot of them are people who are in the industry, been in the industry a long time, whether they are in the front end or in the back end. And what I mean by that is whether they're underwriters or people who look on the secondary market to purchase your loan, or whether on the front end, originators, people who work at loan companies, people who work as account executives and loan officers who do have knowledge of the products and tell the clients, the customers out there, exactly what is being sold and what is being offered to them. Love all these people. They come on the show. They give us the information that we need. My particular segment is a bit more about the overall of what's happening in the marketplace. So let's get to it. Let's talk about rates, first of all, and what's happening in the bond market. Rates today, 3.16 for the 30-year, 2.57 for the 15, 2.70 for FHA, 3.18 for the jumbo, and 2.60 for the 5-1 ARM. The 10-year Treasury yields today, 1.37. Now, we have had a breakthrough, and to the opposite end of where we thought we would have a breakthrough on the 10-year. What we thought we were going to do is see the 10-year rise, i.e., the debt that U.S. Treasury bonds sell would become less attractive, i.e., you would have to offer more in terms of the yield in order to get people to buy the debt. Well, that didn't happen, and that was a surprise to many. As a matter of fact, the breakthrough number that we were flirting with 1.5%, right? And on the downside at 1.44 all the way up to 1.63. This is kind of where we've been for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Broke through the downside last Friday and has continued to do so here on today and during the week. We see this number and we say, okay, so where does the bond market lead us? And everybody who listens to the show know that this 10-year is a real kind of a benchmark for where we are with the rates. And the rates that I quote are pretty low, right? Well, that's also because the yields are low. Yields low, so therefore the rate's going to be low. If the yields go up, the rates go up. That's kind of the where it is. The reason being is that the government selling debt is the main source of what the 10-year is all about. So if they have to pay more to people buying that debt, somebody has to come up with that money, and that's usually reflected in the rates that are charged to consumers. They have to pay more, and that money trickles its way, not trickles its way, but gets right back to the Treasury where it's supposed to be. So, interesting, right? Rates, where they are, where they're going, where they're going to go for the rest of the summer, and that's reflective, I think, in these numbers. But the reasons why this is happening, yeah, we're not quite sure, because there is a difference of opinion as to what the economy is doing and to where it's headed. We have a prognostication, a guess as to what the economy will be like by the end of the year, but we're in July, early part of July. So where is it today, and how does that affect your supply and demand in the mortgage market space and how you're out there trying to get mortgages? Well, we do know that inventory in most of the major markets, especially in the markets that this radio show airs, we've seen an increase in inventory to 5 months plus. Now, Earlier in the year, we were at 3 months plus, and that was bad, and that's why we saw prices skyrocket the way they were. Some places in the country were going up 10% a month. Now, that's unsustainable, obviously, and anybody who's looking for an excuse to call it a bubble, I understand why. But the bubble would presume, of course, that real estate prices as they are cannot be sustained by either the employment in the area or the inventory in the area, or that the money is being handed out frivolously, i.e. 2008. And in those years, yes, I could say yes to all three of those things, which is what happened when the mortgage market itself imploded. And of course, the real estate market overall imploded. I've heard from a number of sources, as well as read on either Housing Wire or you go to Mortgage News Daily or any number of different sources out there in the marketplace, the real estate market is not like that because the loans are also not like that. The real estate market has to do with supply and demand, and we just don't have enough houses. Even at 1.5 million houses built per year, we couldn't catch up. And, you know, that's a problem. Obviously, 2008, we saw a lot of people foreclosed upon. Large entities came in, purchased these homes, and have been renting them out ever since. Now, the cost of renting is more expensive than the cost of buying. Yes, in most of the country, that's true. In the major metropolitan areas where this show airs, it may not be true. But it is true, I believe, in Albuquerque. I believe it is true also in Las Vegas, although it's harder and harder to find a house below $317,000. 5 years ago, that number would have seemed impossible in terms of the median home price out there in Las Vegas, but it's closer to the truth today. But I do still think that there are housing out there available to you that is less expensive than renting a home. The question in all these cases has to do with the fact that the down payment that is needed, whether it's a millennial who can't pay their student debt, whether it's somebody making, you know, minimum wage, even if minimum wage is $15 an hour, or it's just, you know, in that large group of people who are in that $30,000 to $70,000 range, I still think Vegas you can afford, but in other markets, obviously Los Angeles, no. Obviously San Bernardino, Riverside counties in Southern California, the answer would be no. Up in the Tahoe area, I think, you know, we're going to talk to Jill Denton today, and she's going to tell us a little bit about what the median up there is. I believe you can still find housing up there, but it's fewer and fewer far between. She's expert in that area, as well as in San Francisco. You know, we have a couple of people up there now, which is good. They can describe what's happening. A lot of the interior of California has gone high in prices, whether it's there or whether up the 15 from San Bernardino, Riverside, going up the corridor to Las Vegas. All of that real estate is more and more expensive. But, yeah, so that's where we are with that. And I have no more to say about that, and I'll throw that paper away. But what we can talk about is what is happening in the mortgage industry. The mortgage industry itself is ruled by the CFPB, as you all know. A couple of things that we talked about, touched upon briefly before, and we'll get into it in the next section a little bit more thoroughly. But the new rules that are going to be in place, have been in place since July 1st, and will go into, I guess, requirement about a year from now. And these are, when we talk about the ability to repay rule and how that has been administered up until July 1st this year, has been largely to do with the debt-to-income ratios. And those debt-to-income ratios, as you all know, 43 to 36, right? The front end is 43, the back end is 36. Those particular rules have been changed. The new rule is, the way that we price loans is based on whatever the rate is plus 2.25%. Anything above that is non-QM. Anything below that is QM. Now, when we say QM, non-QM, we've talked about it a lot on the show. What is a qualified mortgage? What is a non-qualified mortgage? Anybody who's in the qualified mortgage range is going to get a better rate because those loans are sold to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Those loans being sold to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac get you a better rate. That is true. But the rules have changed as to what qualifies a loan as a qualified mortgage and what qualifies it as a non-qualified mortgage. And that's what we're going to get into in a section later on into the show. I do appreciate you listening. Every week we come on the air and we talk about, you know, the great things that we're trying to do for you in education in the real estate and mortgage industries. Thanks very much for listening. I do appreciate it. My name is Jeff Martin. This is The Mortgage Voice. Hey, if you want to go to YouTube, go to The Mortgage Voice JB. That's the new hashtag. Thanks very much, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Martin. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show. Thanks very much for listening to us each and every week. We do appreciate it. Got a call on Monday of this week during the holiday from somebody who heard one of our guests on the show, wanted to know who they were and where they could be reached. And so if you have somebody, anybody that you hear on the show that you can't understand how to get in touch with them because for some reason you wrote the number down wrong, you can always get to us. We are on a number of different places. We are on, I don't know, 10 podcasts, 5 radio stations, and of course YouTube. If you go to YouTube, go to The Mortgage Voice JB and you will get me, and you can track down the segments there. And we bring information to you. That's the point of the show. We're not here to sell you anything. We just want to have you have the information. Forewarned is forearmed, as they say. And so I do appreciate it. And again, we bring a terrific guest to the show today, Jill Denton, who has been a realtor up for EXP in the Bay Area, as well as where we'd like to talk a little bit about today in the Tahoe area of Central California. And she joins us now. Jill, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How about you?
I'm doing well. Actually, I had a cold last week, so we had to postpone. And thank you, by the way, for being gracious enough to say yes to the postponement. Appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's get right to the meat of what I wanted to talk about. We're always looking for experts in the field, especially in the real estate area. Give us an idea of what's happening in the Tahoe area right now, today, July 2021.
Well, Tahoe's seeing what just about everybody else across the country is seeing, a very, very competitive market. We're seeing multiple offers, homes that are priced well, show well, are selling on average between like 4% and 8% over list
mm-hmm.
price.
Okay.
And they seem to be going pending in about 5 to 9 days. So
Wow. That's
fast.
Wow, that's fast. And that's typical, as you said, to a lot of areas of the country. The median home price there, can you give us an idea what that might be?
Yeah, in South Lake Tahoe, Tahoe has multiple NLSs because it's actually a very big area,
right.
Two of which are on the California side and one that's on the Nevada side. If we're
right.
talking South Lake Tahoe, the median home price is $729,000.
Wow.
That's up about 44% since last year.
Wow.
Wow. And if we're talking all of Tahoe, the median house price is $875,000, up about 34% for all around the lake.
And the availability of property, even if you could afford that, what is it? Is it rising? I mean, I've heard a lot of the markets in the country came from 3 months to 5 months in terms of inventory. What's it like there?
You know, it's so interesting. I'm actually a homeowner in the Nevada side of Tahoe.
Uh-huh.
And if you were interested in purchasing a home, let's say 5-6 years ago, there was plenty of inventory and homes took months to sell, a long time.
Right.
We're not seeing that now. Now inventory is short and houses are selling quick. I think a lot of reasons, COVID, just like with everyone else, people are looking for either a second home or a bigger home, someplace where if they work from home or have children, that they have places to expand. And Tahoe's a wonderful place for
sure.
outdoor activities, winter, summer, spring, fall. So it's been a big attraction.
Do you think it's more a supply and demand issue, or is it, like you say, people moving from one area because they want to either have a better life with their kids or want to work from home? I always get caught in this debate, whether it's we're not building enough houses or whether it's just people are moving to Tahoe.
I think it's both.
I see.
The amount of homes being built has gone down over the last 15, 20 years.
Right.
So we're not building as many homes. Yet many people are moving here from different parts of the country and different parts of the world. So to keep up with that, prices go up because inventory is down.
Right. Of course.
People, look, Tahoe's a great place, you know. There's a lot of locals up in the Tahoe area who are very proud of living there and the lake and know all the secret spots. And they love Tahoe. And they have a hard time sometimes with all of the tourists that come in and don't respect the land as much as they do. I think people, I hope people are getting better at respecting the land, especially those who come up and vacation or buy a vacation home.
Right.
You know, it's a neighborhood. It's a city, just like any place else across the country.
That's interesting. There's a lot of that going on, and I think the reason for that is that the prices went up. It attracted a different clientele or a different group to who can afford that. I mean, not everybody. I mean, in my particular town, Malibu, California, when I got in there, it was relatively cheap, and this is 25, 30 years ago. And the reason was is because, you know, nobody wanted to go there. Well, of course, now it's, you know, playground for the rich and famous. So all the properties that are there that are lived in or purchased today are, you know, $5, $6, $7 million. And as a result, it's a whole different crowd of people. And as you say, they just don't act like the locals. There's some friction. Occasionally there's issues with, you know, slashed tires and people getting upset on the beach. I don't know if that's the way it is there, but I certainly hear what you're saying when it comes to the difference between the new crowd and the old crowd. I mean, I got there 25 years ago, 30 years ago, and I'm still considered the new crowd. Isn't that funny?
That's true.
I know.
That is funny, but very true. And yeah, I think it's the same thing in Tahoe. Some of the locals are priced out of owning there.
Right.
Some of them have a hard time even renting there because,
you
know, it's the Bay Area playground, and it's a playground for the world. People travel from all over to see that lake.
Right.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's beautiful, and it's a brand name, too, and it's a problem of success, I guess. Okay, let's talk logistically about your own particular business. When you have a client who's interested in purchasing, what do you do to get them a leg up on the competition?
Well, it starts with years of experience and knowing how to write an offer.
Right.
We'll start with the basics.
Right.
To know how to fill out a contract, to know how to check the right boxes, write the right information so that it's clear to them with their client. We are all in this together to make it work out for everyone, and the best way to make that happen is with communication. Ghosting does not work.
That you know that term, that's great, because I heard it for years and had no idea what ghosting was, and then nobody called me back, so then I figured it out.
Yeah, so I think communication is really, really key. You know, having clients that you can educate, people have different learning curves.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with buyers, for example, who I can say, this is the market, this is what's going on, this is where I recommend you come in price-wise. That's usually the sticking point.
Right.
And people will listen to me on the first time. Sometimes people have to learn a lesson by writing an offer once and realizing that I was correct in my information that I gave them.
Right.
So you have to be able to work with them, hopefully quicker than later, because once somebody's written several offers, they get discouraged.
Right. That's true.
Fortunate, and the last, I don't know, dozen buyers I've worked with, I haven't written more than two offers for any of them.
Well, that's great, because they're listening to the agent. Jill, I'm running up against a clock here, but I want to give you an opportunity to let people know how to get in touch with a terrific person, great agent up there in that area.
Sure, thank you. I appreciate
it.
So I split my time 50-50.
Yep.
Between the Tahoe area and the Bay Area. The phone number I've had for years, and I will give that to you now. It's 925-998-7747, and you can always find me anywhere on the Internet, so just search for Jill Benton Realtor, and you'll find me.
Excellent, Jill. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it, and we want to get the other half of the update next time you come on the San Francisco side. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Have a great day.
And you have a great day, too. That's Jill Denton from eXp Realty. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show. Thanks very much for listening each and every week. We bring to you guests and information and all kinds of different things that you can think about when you're thinking about either buying or selling real estate. I know we talk about that all the time, ad infinitum, as they would say. And the reason is because now is the time. If you're buying, now is the time. If you're selling, now is the time. We talk about the spring buying season. Well, we're right in the middle of the summer buying season. And now that, you know, COVID is, for the most part, behind us in terms of not wearing masks and not being paranoid about going on showings, you can get out there and see a house. Go out there, see a house. Now, the one thing you're going to see is that the prices have gone through the roof. Here to talk to us about that and what's going on in the Inland Empire, San Bernardino, Riverside Counties, County Hernandez, who is going to talk some about real estate, some about mortgages, but mostly about what's happening in the market. Connie, how are you?
Fine, Jeff. How are you?
I'm okay. What's that?
Oh, thanks for having me on. You sound a little better.
A little bit better, yes. Thank you. I have some energy, although my nose is still clogged somewhat, but you know what? I sound nasally, and if you're out there and you've heard me before and you're wondering who is this guy, yes, I had a cold last week and had to postpone the show, but now that I'm back, I appreciate it. So tell us, what is happening in the market in the Covina area, and what's going on in the IE?
Well, in San Gabriel and also in Inland Empire, we're seeing the same thing, Jeff. Lots of competition when it comes to purchasing homes. I've worked with many different real estate agents that are still very frustrated because
yep.
There's multiple offers going in on one property. And, you know, in the 25-plus years that I've been in the industry, we've seen this before, but
yep.
I have never seen it where people are bidding $30,000 and $40,000 above market price, yet waiving the appraisal contingency. That is just insane for me to see that. But
okay.
It's happening every day.
Hold on a second here. So you're saying that no appraisal, they're saying we don't want an appraisal and we're going to pay you another $30,000-$40,000 over asking?
That's happening, Jeff. I hear it day in
wow.
and day out with most of the realtors I'm working with our own agents that we work with. If competition is still there. I mean, we were thinking, honestly, that by now that would have kind of paced itself down.
Yep.
But I have a loan right now where my borrower is having to borrow from their retirement account an extra $10,000, and they're paying exactly $22,000 above what the property appraises for.
Really
and
amazing.
They're willing to do it.
How do the lenders look at this when they see the contract and the negotiations? They didn't even mention it. They just look at the end price and the appraisal, and buyer comes up with the difference. That's it. Is that the way it works?
That's it. The
yeah.
borrower comes up with a difference, but because the borrowers are coming up with those differences, I believe, and I'm assuming it's the same in most areas, why the changes have happened where, I mean, I'm seeing homes that are 1,600 square feet, three bedrooms, two baths, maybe lot size is about a little under 7,000 square feet. They're crazy, close to $700,000.
That's crazy. Right. I mean, location, right? So you're talking in
exactly.
places where 10 years ago these prices would be unheard of. These are coastal prices. Well, you're not on the coast.
Yes.
And these are pretty expensive
no,
prices.
Course.
Right.
Exactly. So, yeah, the competition is definitely there. I know there's a lot of frustration going on in the real estate industry and but it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are still buying. The rates are still attractive. I believe the rates are still very attractive.
Yeah, they came down, too.
You and I both know regular rates or normal rates are normal.
Mm-hmm.
We can call it normal. But I believe that they're willing to pay the difference because they're still getting loans under 3%. So
yep.
money's inexpensive.
Okay, so you're in one of these situations and you want to make sure that your client gets the upper hand or the leg up or the first choice, what do you do in terms of making sure that your client is the one that's going to get the purchase?
Well, right now what we're doing is we're working with the lenders to get them pre-approved.
Okay.
We're also, honestly, getting them to a point where all we need really is the home and order the appraisal. And I write very strong letters on my approvals.
Okay.
I don't have just a standard pre-approval letter anymore. I pretty much basically go through, this is everything that's checked off of our client that we can say we're ready to go on a loan. And we're to a point now where, just to be somewhat competitive, and I'm saying somewhat for a reason, because if my borrower can only come in with maybe $10,000-$15,000 above asking, and he's competing, if I can close his loan in less than 20 days,
right,
then that helps.
Yes, it does. I mean, it's so first the money, right?
We're trying to use a time frame as leverage.
Now, I have heard, and I have read an article, that in some communities in California, they're trying to do away with what they call the love letter, what you referred to as your letter or the buyer's letter. Have you heard that?
Yes. It's funny that in our situation very funny story.
Okay.
The agent, the listing agent, did not and would not show the love letter from one of the agents that I'm working with and that I have the loan with. And come to find out that they accepted someone's offer due to a love letter that they read from the other client. Other client couldn't perform.
Mm-hmm.
We were next in line. And we're like, and then they went ahead and asked for the love letter. So it's very confusing. I mean,
well, that's confusing.
Don't want them, but yet they're still reading them. And we're trying to comply with what we're supposed to or not supposed to do.
Right.
But we're finding, honestly, that most agents aren't really listening. They're still providing the love letters and hoping that they'll get read.
Well, I personally think the love letter was always a great idea. It gives some personality to the client, at least some text. Now, I haven't read them all that came in for offers that we have, but I can understand that they might get a little, you know, exuberant, maybe over the top, but in your particular case, they didn't want it. Now they do want it. I don't know. It just sounds like the buyer's agent, or rather the seller's agent, you know, they made a mistake with the first love letter. I would say I don't want to see any love letter now, because I listened to one and I didn't get the deal. You know what I mean? I mean, why would you want to do that and put your seller in the same position you just got them out of? Anyway, I hope they get the deal. Did they get the deal?
They actually did. They did open up because they were next in line, and they have pretty much the same offer. But, you know, I'm trying, just as a lender, because of the situation where some agents are actually complaining and refusing love letters,
yep,
I'm trying to make our pre-approval as strong as possible, as detailed as possible,
That's good.
The point where now I have checkpoints or check-off lists of what's already been supplied by the borrower, current pay stubs, current bank statements,
right,
and
credit report
received. Mm-hmm. And
okay,
it just gives them a sense of, okay, they have all their paperwork. They're not going to get any surprises. You know, I'll even put the most recent date of the credit report that we have in hand. So, I mean, without, you know, overkill on the approval letter, I'm just trying to make sure that it's not a generic letter, like, you know.
Right, it's personalized to the deal. Right.
Letters.
Right. I think that's a good idea. I think that's the way to do it, other than short of sending over a DU approval, which, you know, it's hard to do without an approved contract. But at the same time, anything you can do to try to give your client a boost, and I think, you know, specific details on the borrower from you,
well,
is good.
To touch on that point of DU approval, I would say 90% of the pre-approvals that I said, maybe even a little higher than 90%, are requesting DU approvals
yep.
now.
Yep. They got smart, and they said, okay, although, you know, mm-hmm, the DU approval is only as good as the information you put in. So, I mean.
This is why I tie it in with my letter.
Yeah, I think that's important, because I've seen TBDs out there, to be determined properties, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, wait a second, that doesn't look right. You know, you have all this information on the borrower, but yet, you know, some of it could be just made up just to get a DU approval. I mean, you know.
There are different times, you know.
Right.
I think that in the past, clients were very apprehensive about showing assets. They only wanted to show what they wanted to use as
right.
down payment.
Of course.
Now I encourage my clients to give me everything they have as far as retirement accounts, money they have accessible, not because I'm encouraging them to overpay for the property, But if they really want that property, we want to make sure that the sellers understand that they're solid and they have resources. So, again, you know, where before maybe there was some apprehension about full disclosure on assets, I ask them now to show what they have if they want to compete.
Well, Connie, we have run out of time. As always, we get to the end, and I'm like, wow, we could do more. But I appreciate you coming on. Could you tell people how to get in touch with you if they need a great agent out in that area?
Sure, absolutely. Our office is in downtown Covina, right on the corner of Citrus and Vigello, 101 North Citrus. We've been here for probably well over 15 years now. They can reach me on my direct line, which is 626-422-2017. Or the office line, 626-918-2419.
Connie is a terrific mortgage broker, so if you're out there and you need a loan, give her a call. Connie, thanks very much for coming on the show. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening each and every week. We're on a number of different stations. We're on 5 stations in 3 different states. We're on 10 different podcasts. Daryl, do you have a list of those podcasts for us?
I sure do, Jeff. It's Apple Podcasts, Google Music Play, Spotify, Spreaker, Stretcher. Is it Stretcher?
Stitcher. One of the two.
And iHeartMedia.
Okay, thank you very much. Plus, we're on YouTube and also Podcast.io. Podcast.io is a new podcast collection of different podcasts from around the country. We're lucky to be on there in their financial section. And if you go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, you can see this show. We record it each and every week. Some of the radio stations carry a feed, some don't, but it's housed there. We have 8 years worth of shows on there, hundreds of shows, and certainly the segments you want is right there around the corner, themortgagevoice.com as well. Thank you very much for listening. With me today from Spring EQ is Lori Preege, and she comes to us, talk to us a little bit about what's going on with second mortgages, as well as how those second mortgages might be able to help you secure that down payment that you not only need, but need to buy that house you want to get into. Lori, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Okay, explain to the audience what your company does and how it can be utilized either in purchase or in refi.
Okay. So Spring EQ Home Equity offers home equity loans, fixed rate, fully amortizing loans in second position, and we also offer HELOC, home equity lines of credit, in second position. And our seconds can be used to facilitate purchases, piggyback refinances, and standalone transactions, standalone cash out.
Okay, and talk a little bit about the purchases for me. How do you see it used mostly when it comes to purchasing?
So what we see our second being used most often is from buyers who are looking to minimize their down payment but also increase their sales prices above FHA or conventional standard loan limits. So those limits vary by county, but normally what will happen is the clients who want to buy above the conforming loan limits will be put into a jumbo loan product, which has very strict debt-to-income ratio and cash reserve requirements. So what happens is instead of doing one jumbo loan, they break that loan up into two. The first mortgage would be the conforming loan limit for their area, and then our second would be for the difference, and that way they can avoid those strict guidelines.
Okay, and the guidelines are what, on the debt-to-income ratios, or are they mostly on rate?
So on the jumbo loan, and this is not, of course, you know, for every lender out there, but for the most part, jumbo lenders are looking at like maybe a 36 to a 42 back-end ratio, but they care about the front-end ratio, where conforming lenders, and we do not. So they get hung up on the front-end qualifying payment ratio, and then they're looking at 12 to 18 months of cash reserves. And by breaking that loan up into two loans, conforming first and second, the cash reserves are much, much greatly reduced, like maybe 2 months or even no cash reserves versus that 18 months.
Okay. Do you see this product increasing in what you do in terms of your business? I mean, to me, this is an answer to a lot of different questions as to, oh, I can't afford it because of the down payment. Like you say, the jumbo loans, most of the loans in, well, at least in Southern California, I would say our listening audience spans from Vegas down to Albuquerque, right, and all the way up to Tahoe, as well as down here into the Inland Empire, Los Angeles, San Bernardino countries. It's the property values are pretty high, and I would say that this particular product is very helpful. What are you seeing in terms of the growth of this particular product, and how do you see it going forward the rest of the summer?
Well, I expect to see our business, you know, continuing to increase just because the sales prices continue to increase.
Right.
And since I'm not a first mortgage lender, I can't really be exact on the conforming loan limits, but I know in, like, Riverside in San Bernardino County, I think it's 548-250 is
right.
The maximum loan you can get without going into jumbo. So this really helps the people who are buying. You know, I guess pretty much every house is over 548.
That's what I mean, yeah. Every house. I mean, what house isn't?
So,
right.
So you're either going to be jumbo or you're going to have to break your loan up into a first and a second.
Right.
And with us, we allow as little as 3% down. So you can do your conforming first and still finance up to 97.5% of the home's value.
Now
you cannot do on jumbo. That's not allowed.
Yeah, no. To me, that in purchase, it's really a it's a solution to people. Now, when you talk about HELOCs, the HELOC itself is a product that went in favor, went out of favor. Is it currently in favor with a lot of borrowers because of all the equity?
Yes. Well, most people ask for HELOCs because they don't know there's another choice. So the home equity line of credit is an adjustable product that can be used and reused for 10 years. So a lot of sophisticated buyers like that product because it allows them, you know, maybe for cash flow for their business or they're buying properties and flipping them. So a lot of people like that product. But there is another product out there, which is our fixed rate product.
Okay.
And that's, I would say, a more conservative product because the rates don't change. It's totally fixed. And we're the only home equity lender who even offers that product. So right now we're doing probably about 50-50 between the two products. Each one's getting about 50% of our business.
Right.
The disadvantage of the HELOC is that we have to use a higher qualifying payment. So on the purchases, I always try to make sure that it's looked at from both the fixed rate perspective and the HELOC because they may not qualify on the HELOC because of the higher qualifying payment, and then the fixed rate would be there as backup.
So the higher qualifying means that at the highest amount that you could charge over the life of the loan, that's what they have to qualify at? Is that what you're saying?
No, we qualify them at a rate 2% over. So if let's say their HELOC rate was 5.5%, we would have to use a 7.5% qualifying payment. Where on the fixed rate, we might be using, you know, a 5.75% payment because the fixed rate is priced a little bit higher because of the safety of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact that it's fixed. So the fixed rate gives them a much lower qualifying payment than the HELOC. But, you know, there are a ton of people who can qualify on that higher HELOC payment. So
right.
It's nice that we offer both.
Now, on the HELOC itself, can you pay back the HELOC and still maintain the amount that's in the HELOC, meaning you can borrow as you wish?
Yeah, so with the HELOC, you can use and reuse it for 10 years. You can borrow, pull out money, pay it back, reuse it again, kind of like a credit card.
Right, right.
And the fixed rate product, all the money is spent at once, and there's no reusing it. It's just like a fixed rate first mortgage.
Of course.
It just happens to be in second position.
Well, that's there's less risk to a loan like that because it's more of a standard product. And that's probably why the rate's lower.
Well, the fixed rate product's a little bit higher because it's fixed. So you pay a little bit more for the stability, where the HELOC, it's a little bit lower, but there's a higher rate upside, so it's not quite as steady.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so just now that we're on rates, so what is a range of a rate that we would get for either product?
Well, the lowest rate that we offer on either product is 4.99%.
Mm-hmm.
percent. So it varies based upon credit score, CLTV, and the amount of money that you're pulling out at the close. So on a HELOC, we look at two numbers. We look at the total line amount, and we look at the initial draw, and the initial draw drives the price. The more you take out, the lower the rate is.
I see.
On the fixed rate product, it's strictly CLTV, credit score, and loan amount.
On both of those products, it's about, I guess, the usage of the money, right? You don't charge if the money's not used? Or do you charge if
the money? So on the HELOC, they only pay on what they use.
Okay.
Fixed rate, since it's all used, all of it's paid out at close.
I see.
they pay on the total loan amount because we give them every penny at the close.
Okay, so in the products, half you're getting purchase, half is refi, pretty much, right? Or a HELOC, as you said.
So we're doing about 50-50, 50% fixed, 50% HELOC, and then our business is probably 30% purchase, 30% refi, and, I guess that's not blah, blah, it's up to 90. So it's about a third. So third purchase, third refi, and a third standalone, second, where there's no first mortgage involved.
Now, your company, Spring EQ, been around for 10 years, more?
No, we've been around, I think, about 4 years right now.
Oh, 4 years. Okay, so it's a fairly new company, but there's quite an appetite for this product, especially since real estate prices have shot up over the last 18 months to 2 years, right, I would imagine?
Yes. So home buyers are what I call equity rich. They have a lot of money tied up in their house. They've refinanced their houses for the most part and gotten that really great low rate. And now they have an appetite for getting some of that cash out for home improvements, debt consolidation, buying other properties. So we're seeing a lot of standalone cash out transactions with our home equity products right now.
Lori, could you shout out your phone number to let people know how they can get in touch with you in case they want one of these terrific products?
Sure. My number is 949-610-3379, and I'm in Pacific Standard Time Zone.
Thank you very much, Lori, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I really appreciate you having me. It's always nice to talk about our product. We do have one of the most aggressive home equity products, so we definitely want to share that with everybody.
Thank you very much. That's Lori Preach from Spring EQ. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for listening to the show, for tuning in. I was thinking just now before I was signaled to go back on the air, we talked earlier on the show, and we talked about QM and the ability to repay and the new rules that are coming about, currently voluntary, but soon to be enough, they're going to be changed. Many of what we try to do since 2008, when Dodd-Frank came in, is to try to get the best loans possible for the most people possible. I mean, that's really what it's been about. There has been, since that time, a problem because the QM rule, if you wanted to get the best rate, you had to qualify with showing that you could repay the loan. Part of that repayment of the loan meant that you could not have debt to income, meaning you owe more than you make, beyond 43%, meaning all that you owed, including the mortgage, couldn't be beyond 43% of what you made in income. Just couldn't be. But that didn't address what FHA loans do, because FHA loans, which are non-QM as a rule, but are down payment loans, but these are having debt-to-income ratios up to 50%. And they're great loans, and they're, loans that are designed for people to get into a property with less than 3% down or 3% down. So there was a problem between the 43% debt-to-income ratio and this 3% down up to 50% debt-to-income ratio, because the government was buying all of it. Ginnie Mae was buying FHA. Fannie and Freddie were buying all the QM loans, the 43% DTI loans. So they came up with what they called the QM patch, which allowed certain loans sold to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to extend that 43% up to 50%. But there was always in the minds of the regulators a problem with doing that, because it wasn't a fixed final rule that this is it and this is in stone. Well, they came up with the final rule after several years of back and forth trying to figure out what the best thing to do. So the final rule, what is the final rule? They're doing away with debt-to-income ratios, right? They're requiring it in terms of qualification for the loan, but not in terms of buying it from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. What the new qualified mortgage is, states that if you have a loan and you have a rate and that the fees into the loan, including the compensation to the broker or to the lender, does not exceed 2.25%. These are all simplifications, but this is basically it. That means that that loan qualifies to be purchased by Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Now, they did a comparison of 2018 loans. If you did away with the patch up to 50%, about 940,000 loans couldn't have been done that year. However, under the new rule, which states that the compensation or beyond the rate can't be more than 2.25%, you would be able to do almost all of those loans. So they're figuring that, okay, we're going to have a final rule that encompasses the new rule, and that new rule says that if you have a loan and your rate is, whatever your rate is, or the available rate is what they call it, anything 2.25% over that, which is the compensation and whatever the fees are to get that loan, if it's below that, you got a qualified mortgage, which means probably for you as the consumer, I know this is confusing, but what it, the bottom line is, if you qualify for this, then you would get the best rate. Anything beyond that is called non-QM. Those non-QM loans, and by the way, the non-QM loans, the rates are pretty close to the QM loans. And one of the reasons why, and I'll tell you in a second, as per the new rule, these rates have been merging together because there's going to be a bigger and bigger market for non-QM loans as a result of the final rule. The final rule was adopted July 1st of this year, 2021. And that particular rule will become mandatory within a year. Maybe by the end of the year, but I think about a year from now. So what happens to those loans that are outside of that particular, you know, risk field? For instance, if you have a loan that you can't satisfy and you have to go non-QM, so therefore the definition of non-QM is going to change somewhat, but what happens to that loan? Well, if you're outside the field of that 2.25%, your loan becomes QM after 3 years if there's no delinquencies on that loan, which means that if you are a lender and you hold that paper, so I work for a company, Malibu Funding. They can do a loan and they can keep your loan and service that loan, right? If they service that loan and you make the payments for 3 years, they can then take that loan and sell it off to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, what does this mean by way of those particular lenders who go outside the box a little bit and do non-QM loans? That if they're close enough and they have you continue to pay for 3 years, that loan becomes valuable as a product to sell for them. They've made money in servicing, now they're going to make money in selling the loan, as opposed to trying to find a non-QM investor or a pool of loans that really hasn't existed. I mean, prior to COVID, what was it? Yeah, it's prior to COVID. COVID or prior to 2008? I think prior to 2008. That's what it is. And as a result, the market for non-QM loans on the private sector was $1 trillion prior to 2008, about a third of the market. It's about a third of the market now, but only $20 billion is sold in terms of mortgage-backed securities to the private sector. So what happens to those loans is they become what we call portfolio loans. And large institutions can take them, and companies, there are several out there that do take those loans, hold them. I think Flagstar do that, maybe Flagstar, maybe Home Point, maybe, not United Wholesale, not Quicken, but they are out there. This means that there's a whole new market, or will be a whole new market, for non-QM loans for that 3 years, because it behooves the company doing the non-QM, if they can get 3 years of compliance, meaning you pay for 3 years, to hold that paper and to match closer to the rate that you got or would have gotten had you gotten a QM loan. Now, if this is confusing, I understand it. The report itself was 350 pages. I got through 35 pages before I had to call it quits. Anyway, that's what's happening. It's going to happen. The market will open up. More products are going to open up in the non-QM sector. And anybody who's got a QM loan, you've just now gotten rid of the DTI aspect of that loan. So these are good things and good things for the consumer. One thing, Daryl, I want to ask you a question. Do you know what tokenization is?
Is it something to do with Bitcoin?
A little bit to do with Bitcoin. It has to do with the rearranging of data into bits called tokens, which are rearranged for security purposes for a particular asset, or in this case, a Bitcoin that you would buy and sell.
Yeah, I've heard security, internet security, you know.
It's big in Bitcoin. It's big in credit card companies. They use these in terms of scrambling your credit card number. But putting back the pieces in the right order has to do with the security company and the code, and it's less people involved in knowing what that secure information is. Now, do you know what the tokenization of assets is?
No, I do not.
Exactly. Who does? Well, a friend of mine sent me an article. It's very interesting. We talked about Bitcoin on the show. Not so much in the last 18 months. We've had a lot to do with COVID. But Bitcoin is real. It's here. It goes up and down like a yo-yo, and most people don't really understand how it works. I don't understand what it is. However, it is being bought and sold, and many, many Bitcoin companies exist. Securitizing that information, but also other assets, is the product of what they call tokenization. Tokenization of those assets, the scrambling of the asset into different tokens, and having those particular tokens bought and sold as an asset itself, is the subject what I'm going to bring up next week, because I think it's fascinating and a lot of people are really hot on it. And I thought I'd bring it to you because this is where you get that information first. Anyway, I'm Jeff Martin, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for listening and tuning into the show, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Martin. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.